And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Take it, Stan.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder here at The View from Over Here. We are on CRNTalkRadio.com. Okay, we're here in the studio with Malcolm today, and we're
Malcolm
going to
today.
Talk about some things that maybe might should interest you. Malcolm, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Did you know that according to Newsmax, 52% of the population of California would like to see marijuana legalized?
Well, I know this 1% over here would like it legalized. And also, not necessarily medicinal.
For recreational. You mean like in Colorado. Yeah, Rocky Mountain High. Well, I'll tell you one thing. If they did legalize it in California, we would probably see the jails half emptied. The state would probably be on a plus on their budget instead of negative. They could rake in a lot of taxes on this product and take it from there. Instead of spending money, maybe they could be making some money.
Well, the big thing is, and the prison is jammed, they're letting out people now that are violent criminals, not necessarily
the
druggies. No, I didn't say mentally ill.
Okay, all right. Oh, speaking of mentally ill, did you know that as much as one-fourth of our population in the entire country at one time or another during the course of a year or whatever will have some kind of mental issue or mental disorder? One-fourth at any particular time. That's a pretty high number of crazy people running around. Mm. But they're not all crazy. Maybe they're just a little maladjusted. But of those that are actually sick with serious disorders or having something that lasts a long time, that's about 6% of our population. Mm. That's 6 out of 100. That's a lot.
Yeah, what I find frightening, which I've just come to realize, is a lot of people develop their illnesses either in the late teens or early 20s that they didn't exhibit anything before. I mean, maybe a little strange, but not mentally ill.
Some illnesses don't start until the 30s, like schizophrenia generally comes on late 20s, early 30s, on the average. I mean, you could have it earlier or later in life, but usually those are the ages.
What happens in the 60s?
In the 60s, you die.
You die, okay.
I don't know. Well, the new 60 now is what? The new 80 or vice versa? Which is it?
I don't know, but I just heard, I was listening to some show on PBS that they were promoting this tape. And it was this doctor from, I forget where it was, from Uruguay or South America. And he said, do not talk about age because age puts you in a certain bracket. If you say that you're a 60, people will think of you as 60. If you say you're a 70, they'll think of you as 70. And the people who don't think about age are ageless, so to speak. They don't worry about it.
Well, that's what he says. That's him. That's his opinion.
In fact, I want to get him on the show. I got his name.
Good. Get him on board. Maybe he could entrance some of our listeners. And by the way, you people out there, if you have questions, remember we have a lot of operators standing by. How many operators, Malcolm?
7, 8, 10.
Okay. All right. 800-336-2225.
No, not 800 operators. And we're just joined by Jerry and Jeff.
Jerry
Welcome
and Jeff.
Aboard.
Okay. Hey, guys. Before we get to the movies of the week, we still have a few more items that our listeners may be interested in. At least I was when I read them. There was a car accident over the weekend. 4 people died. It seems as though a car was stopped by deputies because they were suspected of being involved in some kind of a shooting. The car was stopped, and as the deputies got out of their car, the other car took off, and a chase ensued. And as a result of that chase, the ones being chased crashed, ended up all being conflagrated in a flame, and they died. And the family of the victims, they're now complaining that the sheriff's department should not have been chasing them. And had they not been chasing them, they would not have died. Care to comment on that, Malcolm?
things are getting more and more ridiculous in this liturgous society.
Liturgous or litigious?
Litigious, excuse me. And it's a liturgous also.
Anyway, let's go. Polygamy. Hey, do you know polygamy, which is kind of like outlawed, but is it kind of legal? I don't know what it is in the state of Utah. I know they have a one of those TV shows like, you know.
Yeah.
And it shows this family. The guy has a bunch of wives, kids, and whatever. And a federal judge just recently ruled that certain aspects of Utah's polygamy laws are unconstitutional. What does it mean? I have no idea.
It means I'm moving there.
Me too.
Yeah. Hey,
thank God.
It only holds up for men, not for women.
Yeah, well, this age.
Take her with you anyway.
Would you want to share a husband with seven wives? Well,
yeah, at this point in my life, yeah.
Then you could be Monday.
I could be on vacation.
I hope you're not just joking.
Yeah, Jerry, you're a rabbi. You're supposed to be above all of this.
I am above all of this.
Yes, way above.
That's why I say I hope you're not joking.
I have one more for you here that might be of interest. You've heard of the name Dasani, D-A-S-A-N-I. It's a designer water. It's also a name of a kid in New York City that has been making headlines. One of the 22,000 supposed homeless kids wandering around in New York City. I looked at I guess it's a YouTube video or whatever, and I was impressed that here's a kid who is bright, intelligent, sharp. Every adjective you can think of, you can apply to this kid, and this kid is going to make it in spite of being inundated with poverty and so forth. Look it up. You can Google it. In fact, I have it right here in front of me. The new mayor, de Blasio, he's using this kid in his approach to treat homeless people.
Well, I think that there's – I think it was Bill Cosby or one of the comedians who was telling a story. He said there are two guys. One was in jail and one was a famous attorney. And he interviewed one of them, and the guy said, "Well, you know, what do you expect from me? My mother was a hooker on drugs, and my father, disappeared. I never knew who he was. Of course I'm going to go to jail." Then he interviewed the famous attorney. He said, my mother was a hooker, and she was on drugs, and my father disappeared, and I vowed that I would never let that happen to me or my kids. So, taken to the same circumstances, different people attain different things.
Well, that reminds me of the lyrics from West Side Story when they talk about the song Officer Krupke. When they talk about my mother's in jail, my father did this, my brother did that, and so forth, and I'm a mess because of all of this. Those lyrics are a riot. You should listen to them. They were true then, they're true today, and they are so funny.
Well, maybe if we get Paul to play it.
I have a question. What is de Blasio going to do to change the approach to its homeless?
Well, you have to read this whole thing. Here it is. You could read it now.
Oh, I thought you read it.
No, I just noticed it now.
The headlines.
Oh, I see.
What is he going to do? I don't know. Try to get more votes at the next re-election. I have no idea. Oh, one other thing. Malcolm, the thing that you handed to me, I have to show this to my wife because she gets really upset. She says, when you go into the bathroom to do a crossword puzzle, I don't see you for days. What could you be doing in there for such a long time? And here it is. The anniversary of the crossword puzzle is December 21st, next week. And I knew it was this year, 1913, because the question came up a week or so ago on a crossword puzzle.
Well,
I didn't know the date.
I keep the New York Times Sunday crossword puzzle, and I work on it the whole week. Because it's amazing. You look at something, and you think of one connection. And all of a sudden, the next day, something else will pop in your mind.
Yeah.
And you'll have another connection. And, that's it.
Right,
and you write it down. And then there's a letter from that word that connects to another word.
Wow.
So work it at 10, 15 minutes
a time. The New York Times Sunday puzzle?
On occasion.
Hmm?
I mean, my bad thing is I don't look at the next Sunday to see what the answers I missed.
Oh, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go back, and that's
how
you get better at it.
Do you watch Sunday morning?
I used to.
Yeah, I think it's the best magazine show on television on Sunday morning. But they just did a whole article on the crossword puzzles and the competitions. And they had on the fellow who is the champion, and he completes at least 10 crossword a day, and it only takes him maybe
so he
10,
doesn't work. He
does. Minutes.
He doesn't have a job.
No, he does, and he does this in between. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It is.
Anyway,
well, it
guys,
depends what paper it is. If it's the daily, let's say the daily LA Times on a Monday and a Tuesday, that's easy.
Yeah, the,
but
the
if it's
later
on
in the
Saturday,
week,
yeah, you know. TV Guide is hard. You know, you have to, really have to know your stuff.
I can do that one in my sleep.
Well, that's because you watch a lot of television and movies and everything is showbiz.
I'm all showbiz.
You're all showbiz.
Yeah.
We got to talk one day, talk about your showbiz background and your upcoming show that you're planning.
No, better than that, I want to have Jerry as a guest one day. I want to talk to him and ask him all kinds of questions. Yeah. I think Jerry would make an excellent guest together with Jeff. I think the two of them.
I think Jerry can hold that one alone. Yeah,
no, I think Jerry should. Jeff should be the interviewer. Because she could ask some questions that we couldn't get away with.
I don't talk to her at home. I should talk to her here.
Okay, she could feed us the questions, Malcolm. We'll grill him.
Anyway, guys, we're coming towards the end of our segment, and we have as our special guest Stanley Livingston. Mr. Livingston, I presume?
Dr. Livingston, I presume.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Great, guys. How are you doing?
Okay. Have you been listening to any part of our show? I don't know whether you can get it.
And once upon a time, I was actually part of the TV Guide crossword puzzle. The answer was Chip.
Chip.
That was a brain teaser. Yeah,
As in Buffalo.
Well, as in my three sons, Buffalo. Yes. I guess.
How has that identity lasted you through the years? I mean, when I saw you, you're on the telephone right now, but I remember when you came into the studio a few years ago, and you look exactly like you looked when you play Chip. In other words, I could have seen aside from the beard.
Well, I keep myself in formaldehyde, basically. I don't know. I've been blessed with good genes.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky. My parents both look pretty young for their age. My daughter just turned 44. It looks like she's
44?
About 24. Yeah.
Well, when did my three sons, when was that on the air?
Okay, well, the pilot was made in 1959. It went on the air in 1960, and we produced shows all the way through 1971. So it went for 12 years.
Wow. That's
we
a long
did,
time for us.
380 episodes. Making it the second longest running sitcom ever on TV. In fact, the weird part is we ran in prime time for 12 years and immediately went into syndication from 72 to 85, and 85 Nick at Night came along, ran it for 10 years, and 95 TV Land came along and ran it for about 10 years, and it's been on a bunch of channels since then, The Family, Net, Lifetime.
I got a quickie question for you. This is Stan Weisleder. Those reruns that are Nick and Knight or whatever they are that are still going on, do you guys get like royalties or any kind of compensation?
Well, yeah, that's
when it first went on, we did. You know, it was very limited. Unfortunately, our union really didn't anticipate the value of all of that and allowed the networks or the upstart networks in those days to run wild with them. And, you know, they just figured they would catch up and, you know, cut a deal towards the end.
All right, Stanley, this is Stan. I just want to let you know, we just got the high sign from the control station. They're going to put us on a station break in a few seconds, but we definitely want you back. Don't go away. Don't hang up the phone.
You're listening to The View from over here on CRNTalk.com. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder here on The View from Over Here, CRNTalk.com. www.theblasiogroup.com. I'm here in the studio with Malcolm and Jerry and Jeff Cutler. And on the phone, we have Stanley Livingstone.
Son.
Stanley, are you still there?
Still there.
Great. We have a lot of questions for you about your long-running show, but one question I just want to pop in first. On the show, was there a young girl, a blonde-haired girl, who was somehow related or from the King family?
Yes, yeah, that was Tina Cole.
Okay.
She was the character Katie, who was eventually married to Robbie, and then they eventually had triplets on the show. So, yeah, she was on from, I guess, about the seventh year, about 5 years.
Now, the father was Fred McMurray, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
What was he like? Because I remember him being in movies like Forever.
Exactly, and that's why they want him. Well, the show was created around Fred McMurray and for Fred McMurray, who was at that time a huge, I don't know how not to put this, but a huge, 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 huge movie star. That
Well, he was a big guy also. He was huge in size,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he was a very tall guy. He was 6'4", if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But it was a real, you know, coup to get him to come and do a TV series. It was unheard of that a movie star of his caliber was going to do the daily grind of a TV show, work 5 days a week. But that's what he wanted. He and his wife, June, had adopted two young twins. And, you know, he just really didn't want to go off on the road and do movies and miss those girls growing up. So he wanted somewhat of a regular job. So my three sons afforded him going to work at 8 o'clock, getting off at 6, and going home and having a fairly normal life. And then to accommodate him even further, he worked for about 3 months, and then he would go away during the summer months. So he was gone for about 3 months while we continued to film the series and shoot all the scenes that he wasn't in.
Now, he was married to the same person a long time, wasn't he?
What's that?
He was married to
June Haver.
For a long time, right?
Oh, a long time, yes. Yeah, yeah. But he was a very easygoing guy. I mean, for a movie star of that caliber, you almost wouldn't realize Fred was even in the movie business. Yeah, he drove a Pontiac station wagon. He brown bagged it for lunch.
He brown bagged it for lunch?
Yeah, his wife would make him a lunch. He'd put it in a brown bag and
usually
eat it in his trailer. Sometimes he'd come to lunch with us. But yeah, he's a very humble guy.
Yeah, and who played the there were two different actors that played the part, I think, of his brother or your uncle?
The grandfather.
Grandfather.
Well, it was originally William Frawley, who came to My Two Sons directly from I Love Lucy. He was the Fred Mertz character, and
yeah.
He was on the show about 4 years, and his health was declining. And anyway, he was eventually replaced by William Demarest, who was one of those quintessential second bananas in the film industries.
Yeah, he was a character, as I recall.
Yeah, he was a real character. So was, well, Frawley was even more of a character.
Yeah, you have a story about, I remember you were telling me about Frawley and going to lunch and...
Yeah, I used to eat lunch with him every day. He was one of those W.C. Fields-type characters who really didn't like kids and animals and all that, and had a little bit of a drinking problem. But for whatever reason, we hit it off. And
Wait a minute, he couldn't stand kids, and he is on a program which is about kids.
Yep. That's the way it always works out. But for whatever reason, he took a shine to me, and boy, we just became best friends.
So even though you were a kid, he liked you?
He liked me, yeah. Yeah, I was pretty precocious, and I think he liked that. And we had lunch every day for the 4 years he was on the show at a restaurant called Nicodel's on Melrose. And
yeah, I know that place.
He used to take me to the ball game. He loved sports, so we would go to Dodger Stadium and... You know, I'd hang out with him, my drinking buddy, when I was about 11 years old.
No, this is Jerry Cutler. I loved Demarest. He's one of my favorite character actors of all time.
Oh, yes. No, I mean, he did so many great films.
I think every other film I see on either AMC or TCM, he's like the second banana there.
Well, what kind of a guy was he? That's what
you know, kind of, he was sort of like William Frawley, but without the drinking, you know. Maybe about 3 or 4 less cuss words. Bill seemed to know them all, and was really adamant about me knowing them all.
Now, this is an important question, because I remember seeing him on the screen. He always had sort of like a, I guess the best way you can describe it is to say a New York Irish kind of accent. Did he talk that way when he was off screen?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was him for real.
Guy. If you look back at Bill Frawley in the movies in probably the 20s and 30s, he looked the same. I think when he was born, he looked like that. And the same thing with William Demarest. I'd seen pictures of him when he was, you know, fairly young. And, I mean, he looked old when he was young.
He looked like William Demarest.
Tell me, of all of those people on that show, how many are still with us, alive?
Well, unfortunately, one of the sons passed away last year. That was Don Grady.
Don Grady,
yeah. Character Robbie.
Anyway, Stanley, hold on. We're coming up to a break.
Right.
But I want to get what you're doing now. We did the, you know, all the past. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back on The View from over here on CRNTalk.com.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder. I'm back. I'm here with Malcolm, Jerry, and Jeff, and we have Stanley Livingstone on the phone with us. Stanley, are you still there?
I am still here.
All right, great. Listen, in two words or less, can you tell us your funniest story? No, I'm only kidding. What is your funniest story about working with all of the people that you worked with on that particular show?
Yeah, I'll tell you a pretty funny story. Actually, with William Frawley, you know, towards the end of his run on My Three Sons, as I mentioned, he was having declining health, and they were debating whether to have him back or not for another season, but they decided to have him back for the fourth season. But we ran into a problem with him in terms of him, you know, his attentiveness, number one, and number two, his stamina. And they were trying to figure out how to shoot scenes with him at this point, because the problem was, if you gave him too much dialogue, he couldn't remember it anymore. If you gave him too little dialogue, he would fall asleep in the scene.
So, well, they could have had him in bed, you know, dying.
They
could have done that.
A lot of the scenes, if you notice in the fourth year, he's sitting down, not standing at the stove or doing dishes or all the household chores, which is usually what he did. But anyway, they concocted this plan that they would have him seated for a lot of the stuff, and he'd be darning socks or ironing sitting down. And but when they would shoot these scenes, they had to make sure they got all of his dialogue. And he still couldn't make, you know, if you had long lines, he couldn't do them. And if you had too short of lines, meaning that he would say a line and then, you know, five other people would speak, by the time they'd get back to him, you'd hear.
Uh-huh. How old was he at that time?
Probably in his late 70s, something like that. But anyway, what they did is they used me to keep him awake during the scene. So what would go on, he'd be seated, they'd be doing his close-up, and they would take his shoes off, and they would have me, you couldn't see me from the camera angle, but I'd be pinching his toe.
It's a good thing he liked you.
It's a good thing. But I mean, he finally caught on, and he's like, what's going on here? You know, why do I have to take my shoes off to do acting? I don't understand what's going on here.
Did they cut that, or did they leave it in?
Well, somewhere there's probably an outtake with that in it. He was finally figuring out something was wrong. It's like, how do you do acting? You know, part of it is you take your shoes off. What does that get to do?
Did you have any outtakes of the show?
I don't know. No, I'm sure somewhere they exist, or maybe they don't anymore. We're talking 50
years anyway, ago. Enough of the past. What are you doing now?
Well, I have a production company, and last year I was involved. We actually produced the first Cinerama film that's been shot in over 50 years. It's called In the Picture. It debuted at the Cinerama Film Festival last year in Hollywood at the Arclight Cinema. Got favorably reviewed by Leonard Maltin, which was really ecstatic about that. And, you know, my connection to the project was the fact that I was actually in the last Cinerama film made 50 years ago, which was How the West Was Won.
Are you versed in the technical aspects of Cinerama?
Pretty much, yeah.
I always wondered, how come they just don't use or didn't use then wide-angle lenses instead of this complicated process?
Well, it's Cinerama that led to the widescreen process. That really was the very first widescreen process. And in those days, 1953, when they did this as Cinerama, the industry was really suffering. Most people were defecting from the theaters because of a little thing called television.
Yeah,
and they were staying home and watching television in mass numbers on a little TV screen, and somebody came up with the idea of, gee, what if we did films, but we made it in, you know, huge picture instead of what we've been showing, which is in the 3x4 format. So you had this idea of Cinerama, which coupled three cameras together, and you had an A, B, and C camera, which would shoot this panoramic view. It had almost 180 degrees, and it really emulated human vision. So when you put it in motion, it's amazing. I mean, it's not even like IMAX today. People think, oh, Cinerama must be like IMAX. IMAX is on a flat screen. It's a big screen. But when you have a curved screen and it kind of wraps around you, it's a completely different, and it's a very visceral experience. So anyway, they made about four or five films that were these documentaries, and then they finally decided to do a real film with it, which is The Wonderful World of Brothers Grimm. And then the last film was How the West Was Won. And then it evolved into the same sort of process where you had widescreen, but instead of having three cameras, they did it with an anamorphic lens. So you could actually show, I think they did Mad, Mad, Mad World that way, and 2001, done in Panavision Ultra.
Okay.
Yeah.
The wide-angle lenses.
The wide-angle lenses.
Are they doing anything now?
In terms of Cinerama?
Yeah.
No, this will probably be the last Cinerama film done. Actually, the camera we used, we had to restore, and it was the camera that I originally worked with Henry Hathaway and John Ford, on How the West Was Won.
Wow.
I have a question. This is Jeff Cutler.
Hi.
Hi. When the Cinerama, didn't you see the lines where it sort of it separated?
Sort of, kind of.
Yes, yeah, they merged together, but how they handled that, they always had something vertical in the frame, kind of in that area,
uh-huh,
that made it a little, you
to
know, less
it.
Annoying.
Yeah, like a tree.
Right, right.
Right.
I think when you had a real huge vision and there wasn't anything there, it became a little bit more noticeable. But in the process of restoring these films, there's a guy named Dave Strohmeyer, who is the director of In the Picture, and he is the guru of Cinerama, and he's the guy that restores every single one of the Cinerama films are being restored right now.
Stanley, listen, this is the other Stanley. We're running out of time, but we definitely want you to come back. I think you have a lot of stories and interesting stuff that our listeners would like to hear.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
And we want to also find out about the actor's journey, which we never got into.
Well, that's a thing unto itself. You could do a whole couple hours on that. So, that was that project I did, which we involved over 100 people from the industry. Some really big people. In fact, 40 of the people that are a part of the Actors Journey project have either won or been nominated for Academy, Emmy, Golden Globe Awards. And it's an amazing piece of work. We did it basically to help actors who want to get into the industry, but it really has nothing to do with acting or craft. It has totally to do with the business side of the business.
Okay, Stanley, we're coming up to a break now, but thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, guys.
And we'll have you back.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
And now we're going to have, what movie are you reviewing, Jerry?
August, Osage County.
That's supposed to be a biggie.
It should be. Maybe.
I think and before it opened, wasn't it nominated for some Golden Globes and SAG Awards?
Well, justifiably so, yes. It'll be up for a lot of awards.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't wait to hear your review. We'll be back in a few minutes with The View from Over Here on crntalk.com, or you can go to our back shows at www.viewfromoverhere.com. No, the viewfromoverhere.com. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Stan Weisleder, and we are back with Malcolm, Jerry, and Jeff. And Jerry and Jeff are going to talk about the movie that they just saw. Jerry and Jeff, take it away.
Okay, even before that, Stan, when you were talking to Livingston, you said you remember McMurray's films like Forever. What film was Forever? I don't remember seeing it.
I wanted to break in on that.
He played in a movie, I think the first movie that I recall I've seen, I don't know how many times on TV. Well, I've seen it in a movie when I was a kid.
What, Forever?
No. It was a movie made in 1941. It was right before Pearl Harbor, but it was an all-Navy film. It was called Dive Bomber, and it was all-action movie in color with Errol Flynn, and I've seen it so many times on TV, and I remember him being in that movie. And then, of course, there was that famous movie with Barbara Stanwyck, directed by Billy Wilder.
That's going to be on TV.
It's always
tomorrow.
On TV. It's,
how about the K-Mutiny? Was that
Yes, he was. That's
anyway, right. Let's get to the new movie.
Okay, we saw August Osage County. Now, it's about a mother, a father, a sister, a brother-in-law, three daughters. It is a totally dysfunctional family. And for me, it was like deja vu. I'm sitting there and I say, wait a minute, that's me up there. There's Jeff. They're our kids. So
I do agree with that, Jeff.
I derived no enjoyment out of that. I just said, but anyway, the matriarch of the clan is Meryl Streep, and she's hooked on painkillers, and she because she has cancer. Now, Sam Shepard is in it, and he's a very, it's like a cameo role for him, and he's absolutely wonderful. The acting.
Isn't he the writer?
He writes, he's okay. A playwright, too. Yeah, he didn't write this. But the acting is superb. I don't remember seeing a cast, an entire cast, giving such a strong performance, except one person. I was not very pleased with Ewan McGregor's Bill. He plays one of the son-in-laws or estranged from Julie
Roberts.
Well,
whenever he does an American accent, he does become very bland. In his charisma, he sort of loses his charisma.
It's hard.
Well,
it is
hard. The three sisters are Julia Roberts, who and Julianne Nicholson. I got to talk about Juliette Lewis, incidentally, who I love. I will see any picture with Juliette Lewis in it. And she plays a bimbo here, but she plays a bimbo better than any other living actress.
Better than a real bimbo.
She's outstanding. Julia Roberts, this is the best, by far the best performance I have ever seen her give. Now, you have to remember, she was playing opposite someone who's not bad. And that's, of course, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep, I've never heard from someplace. That name sounds very familiar.
Well, you'll hear a lot more about it.
I think they'll be up for Best Actress against each other for the awards.
It's quite possible. If they are, I think Roberts would take it. But it's because of Streep that she's so strong, because Streep's acting is so powerful.
Aren't they going to rename the Best Actress Award the Meryl Streep Award?
Well, if she gets it this year, they very well might. Also, why don't you quit? Now, it's actor. You don't refer to them as actors. So why? Which I find.
Yeah, why is
so
that?
I don't know.
Politically correct, which makes no sense.
You know what? It's like the Lord is my shepherd, which I do at all funerals.
The Lord is my shepherdess?
Today is Adonai, which is Hebrew for God. Where Adonai is more generic term. Lord, of course, pertains to a man. And they're changing that, which bothers the heck out of me.
Well, if they're actors, why don't they give one award for the best actor, which would include women, and have them compete against each other?
Well, they should, if that were...
Don't they say
logical.
Male actor and female actor?
Well, I like it the way it is, incidentally. At any rate, you know who's also in it? Abigail Breslin. You know, you remember her?
The kid, yeah.
Little Miss Sunshine. Well, she's grown up now.
She's
14, and she plays the daughter of
Julia Roberts,
and she happens to smoke weed. I mean, she's like sweet. So even that's dysfunctional. The sister of Streep is played by Margot Martindale, who's also dysfunctional. And she's wonderful. I don't know if you know who she is, but she's terrific.
Yeah, you keep saying dysfunctional. Dysfunctional is the new normal.
Well, this goes way beyond normal. Okay. I mean, everyone in this particular movie is a bit crazy.
This take place in modern times?
Yes. It takes place in, I think, Oklahoma.
Yeah, in Osage County.
Right. And they are so angry with him. Where is this anger come? Well, I know where it comes from. I'm married. But anyway. But I kept on looking at Jeff and was wondering her reaction to what was going on.
The guys, we're coming up to a break. We'll get Jeff's reaction after the break. You're listening to The View from over here on crntalk.com, and we shall be back.
Stan Weisleder here. We're all back. Malcolm, Jerry, and Jeff, and we are in the midst of discussing a very interesting movie, which was a play. Now, Jerry, Jeff, I've seen the play. I haven't seen the movie. You've seen both. Which do you like better?
Well, I think that's a hard question to answer. What I loved about the play was people, you had the one set, and people were captive within that one place. So you felt everything.
Part of it?
Yeah, you feel okay. Part of it, but you felt there was no escape for anyone. And in the film, of course, they have to go outside a little bit. But I thought it was a great ensemble piece. And what I love to see is when you're past the age of ingenue, that there were roles for women, because for the longest time there weren't roles for you if you were over 30, you know, 28.
But you didn't answer my question. Which did you like better?
I said that was a hard question to answer.
It's different.
I'm a theater person. I loved the play.
And I am a movie person, and I love what Tracy Letts wrote the play and the movie. I didn't find that much of a difference in dialogue, which is great, because that dialogue is brilliant.
It's a great adaptation. It's a really good adaptation.
What I find about plays, you choose your own thing to focus on, a person or parts of the scene. In a movie, the camera tells you what to focus on,
right.
Whether it be a close-up
And I think I got more of a humor in the play than I did in the movie. The movie really, because they're big, they're in your face, it hits you. I mean, I wouldn't want to spend 10 minutes with Meryl Streep as a person, yes. But as Violet, the character she was playing.
I agree with Jeff. Excuse me,
could you repeat that one more time?
I agree with Jeff on this particular point.
We need a drum roll.
Well, it's few and far between that I do, but this time I do.
Okay, quickly, how many bagels do we have on this?
Oh, I would give at least two.
No, four.
I'm joking.
Two.
I would give it probably 3.5 with a schmear.
A schmear.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in the same place as Jerry, and I'd be close to four. Yes.
But that's what 3.5
crumpets
and a schmear is.
Schmear. We don't do schmear.
God sakes.
And a glob of cream on top.
But wait, that's like in class. You get an A or an A minus. It's still an A.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Once again, the acting is just superb, and Chris Cooper is in it. He's always good. He's wonderful, wonderful.
And you know who I love is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes. Oh, yeah,
That's a great name.
Oh, yeah, well, English.
He's on BBC, plays Sherlock Holmes in BBC.
Did you watch Elementary at all?
No, I have never seen
CBS?
It.
No.
It's
no.
a good one also.
No.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, Johnny Lee Miller, I think it is.
Something like that.
And, of course, I'm in love with Lucy Liu.
Yeah, so. She's also very nice.
Well, what was funny, I met one time we were at like a farmer's market, and there was this little Asian girl. She was about 5 foot, maybe 100 pounds, with pigtails and freckles. It was Lucy Liu. I knew it looked familiar. But in person, on the screen,
she looks a lot bigger.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, it's the end of our show.
Okay, you people out there, whether you liked it or you didn't like it, give us a call, 800-336-2225.
Or go to www.viewfromoverhere.com. Remember, it's not the, and we shall be back next week.
One other thing, George Clooney is one of the producers.
Ah, he needed the credit, right?
God bless him. He's in good
He needed
stuff.
The money.
Good stuff. Anyway, you guys, have a great week, and we'll see you. Actually, everybody's going to be in the desert next week.
Everybody
except me.
Everybody will be without water.
They're deserting we'll be in the desert. Peace.
The View From Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.